Dr. Patrick Cowling. Little sleepy dentist office in a little sleepy town.
He's doing dentist stuff.
Yeah, he's just a dentist. Patrick hears what he believes is the racking sound of a shotgun. Patrick turns around to see what this noise was, and there's Chuck standing in his bathroom with a shotgun pointed at Patrick's head. I don't know what all Chuck had planned, but it was going to be horrific. Patrick's not just a dentist.
Okay.
Patrick's a little bit of a badass. What Chuck doesn't know is he just sat Patrick on top of a gun. Now, Patrick is about to do something that to this day, I thought, I don't know that I would have done this.
Dental dread is real for many Americans.
I would rather face a bear than go to the dentist.
Dentist chairs can be painful places.
It's estimated anywhere from 9 to 19% of adults avoid going to the dentist because it makes them anxious.
People think a dentist is a dentist is a dentist. That's not the case.
Welcome to Socialite Crime Club. What kind of hair-raising, adrenaline-filled episode are we bringing socialites today?
I'm going to take you on a roller coaster ride of vulnerable moments that culminate in a split-second decision to live or die. All right, we're back for our second episode on some gun control type issues, or to talk about maybe some gun control stuff.
Yes, this will be very
interesting. I'm still wearing my toucan. It's not because I wore it twice in 2 weeks. It's because it's about 30 minutes after our last episode.
Because you forgot to bring another shirt, and we're in a second week. So I feel like it's kind of weird that I went to change, because technically we're on a different week of episode when it releases.
But we did a doubleheader recording today.
We did. We are doing a doubleheader.
Trying to get caught up for you people so that we've got plenty coming down the pipe.
Plenty of content. Yeah.
All right. So we're going back to Sleepy Gilbert for the second part of this gun series, if you will.
Lots of guns in Gilbert.
Lots of guns. Oh, you have no idea. People love their guns in Gilbert. But we're going to go to 2009. We're going to talk about a local dentist.
Okay.
You know, he's just cleaning teeth stuff, dentist stuff.
Okay.
Little sleepy dentist office in a little sleepy town.
He's just doing dentist stuff.
Yeah, he's just a dentist. Dr. Patrick Cowling. I like Patrick. Now, in 2009, Patrick had a girlfriend by the name of Shelley.
Okay.
And we are using everybody's real name on this because it's going to get a little bit convoluted of people. I've got to use names because if I just use girlfriend or wife or ex-wife, it's going to get really confusing.
For the most part, I think this is a pretty safe episode to do that.
Everything that we're talking about, you can Google and actually read. It made the news big time. So we have Patrick the dentist.
Okay.
We have his girlfriend at the time, Shelley. Now, Shelley is currently going through a pretty bitter divorce. Shelley's husband, soon to be ex-husband, is a dick.
Oh.
I don't know how else to explain it.
Like a domestic violence dick? Or
a little bit of everything, yeah. Okay. He's just a terrible person. She has an order of protection against him. Even his family has filed complaints that when he gets intoxicated, he's just out of control. He becomes very violent. There's been issues with him trying to beat up other people, like while they're holding children.
What?
He's just, yeah, the guy's just an ass clown. He is not a good person.
Okay.
And the husband, Shelley's husband, who she's going through a divorce with, is Charles Goff, G-O-F-F, the third.
That does kind of sound like Charles a dick Goff, name. Charles
Goff, the third, yeah. He goes by Chuck, so we're going to call him Chuck. So we have Patrick the dentist, Patrick's current girlfriend, Shelley. Shelly's soon-to-be ex-husband, Chuck. Got it? And remember, Chuck's a shithead.
This sounds like a fitting name sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to get into too many details, but you'll see by the end of the case why I may have found this out. Chuck's got a really weird porn history. And you know, my browser's as screwed up as anybody's because of some of the things that we research and the cases we get into. Chuck's internet browser and his porn history. Ooh, I learned things that I had no idea existed from Chuck's porn history. Chuck's a weird duck.
Okay. Sorry. I like that those rhymed.
Chuck the weird duck.
Yeah.
April 28th, 2009. Chuck is out in Newport Beach, California. He's going to rent a Dodge Charger and spend the day driving to Gilbert, Arizona.
Oh.
He's mad, pissed off at Shelley. Okay. He's even more mad at Patrick.
Renting the Charger was within his master plan.
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe so.
Okay.
When he gets to Gilbert, he doesn't go to Shelley's house, though. He goes to Patrick's house. It's about 7 o'clock at night, the night of the 28th. Nobody's home because Patrick is over at Shelley's house.
Oh.
Where he's going to spend the night.
Okay.
So Chuck just parks the Charger down the street, keeping an eye on Patrick's house, waiting for him to come home. Well, because Patrick's not coming home, Chuck ends up sleeping in the car, in the street, in front of Patrick's house. Well, it's just down. It's like three houses down. Morning of April 29th rolls around. Patrick gets up at Shelley's house. He's got to be to work. He's got his dentist stuff to do.
Sure.
Teeth to be cleaned.
Root canals to be performed.
Yeah. Some canal rooting to do and some teeth to be cleaning. So he heads back home. As soon as he comes through the front door, he's going to drop his keys and his cell phone on the counter.
Okay.
Go jump in the shower. Get ready for work. Chuck sees him come back.
From down the street.
From down the street.
Oh.
So
he's been waiting. He's been lying in wait.
He absolutely has. So Chuck grabs his bag of goodies and pries open a window and breaks into Patrick's house while Patrick is in the shower.
His bag of goodies.
We'll get to that. This next scene is what nightmares are made of.
Chuck has a home invasion kit too.
Yes, Chuck has a home invasion kit. His is next level home invasion kit.
He didn't just swing by AutoZone.
We ain't going to be talking about nor gorditos this time. The next thing Patrick knows, he's washing his hair in the shower. What do you typically do when you're washing and rinsing
your
hair?
You have your eyes closed.
How many times have you been home alone and like you wash your hair a little bit fast because you're just not comfortable keeping your eyes closed and being that vulnerable in the shower?
Yes, it is a very vulnerable moment. And we've talked about this with other cases of people being struck somehow in the shower.
Right? And it is this exact moment that Patrick hears what he believes is the racking sound of a shotgun. Terrified, Patrick turns around to see what this noise was. And there's Chuck standing in his bathroom with a shotgun pointed at Patrick's head.
Oh my gosh.
And he's just going off. Get out of the shower. You fucking ruined my life. I'm going to ruin yours.
When in actuality, he ruined his own life.
I think Chuck has probably a long history of making poor decisions. So yeah, I think that's a safe assumption.
Sounds appropriate. Okay.
So he pulls Patrick out of the shower, obviously naked. By shotgun, Patrick notices he's got another handgun in his waistband and a pair of handcuffs that's kind of hanging out of his waistband as well.
Okay.
So he takes Patrick into the bedroom, allows Patrick to obviously to dry off, and let him put on a pair of boxers. So that was nice of him.
And to dry off.
Yeah. Takes him into the living room where he's going to zip tie his hands together and zip tie his feet. I think if I recall the details correctly, it was like a zip tie on each ankle and then maybe a zip tie between, or maybe they're connected. Patrick could still kind of shuffle walk.
Okay.
But he can't walk. He can't
run. Sure.
And his hands are zip tied.
He's not going anywhere fast.
So he takes Patrick, he sets him down in the living room, gets his cell phone, hands him his cell phone, tells him to call his office and to cancel all of his appointments because he will not be going to work today. And when he does that, he points the shotgun again at Patrick's head and says, if you say anything other than that, I will kill you. If you don't do it, I will kill you. Do it. So Patrick calls his work, cancels all the appointments that he has that day, at which point Chuck takes the phone back. Chuck begins texting Shelley, pretending to be Patrick, because Shelley doesn't know Chuck is even in the state. So she just starts getting text messages from
what were Patrick. They saying?
Is there any chance you could come over to my house at lunch? I don't feel well today. Could you bring me some soup? Can you bring me something? I'm just not feeling well.
Oh my gosh.
And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry you don't feel well. Yes, I can come over. I can't come over till around noon though.
He was saving the handcuffs for her.
Yeah. Remember though, he has this little goodie bag.
He brought it in with him.
Inside this duffel bag, he has a pair of pliers, some duct tape, wires, like a razor knife.
Oh.
Some type of a gag, if I remember right. Like, I don't think it was a ball gag, but like some type of a gag.
Okay.
A blowtorch. Not a little blowtorch, like the big type of torch you
like
would use.
Like you're welding a car together.
Kind of, yeah. A blowtorch.
Oh my gosh.
And he begins explaining to Patrick that as soon as Shelley comes over at lunch, he's going to kill them both in front of each other. He's going to torture and kill them. Tick-tock. The clock just starts running, essentially. Chuck is very, very clear in what he's telling Patrick. You've ruined my life. I'm going to ruin yours. I'm going to torture you, and then I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to kill Shelley.
Because my wife realizes there are better men out there than me.
And then they just sit there. I've got to imagine it's an awkward morning.
Yeah.
One of them sitting there with a shotgun, the other one zip-tied, and he's boxers. Like, probably not a lot of casual conversation.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They're just buying time waiting for Shelly to come home.
And your hostage holder has your phone.
You can't do anything. He's got your phone, but more importantly, he's got a shotgun pointed at you.
Yes, it is. It feels extremely perilous.
And he's clearly crazy enough at this point that he will kill you.
Like, frightening.
Patrick will later report he was absolutely convinced he was going to die. He had no doubt in his mind Chuck was there to kill him. Well, about 11:30. Oh, it's getting close. About 30 minutes before Shelly is going to get there. Uh-huh. At 11:30, Chuck's got to pee. So he gets Patrick up and they walk back to the master bedroom. He's going to sit Patrick on the bed, and then on the other side of the bed is the bathroom.
Okay.
So he goes to the bathroom. He leans the shotgun up against the door jamb on the inside of the bathroom.
Okay.
Takes the handgun out of his waistband, sets it on the back of the toilet, and he starts to pee. Now, I've been sandbagging a little bit about Patrick.
Oh.
I want to give you a little bit more background.
Okay.
Patrick's not just a dentist.
Okay.
Patrick's a little bit of a badass. Patrick is a very accomplished Brazilian jiu-jitsu... Mm-hmm. What do you call it? Artist? Practitioner?
He's very good at...
Practitioner. He knows his shit.
And jiu-jitsu is amazingly difficult.
Yes. And he's done a lot of self-defense training. More importantly, Patrick has done a lot of firearm training.
Oh, okay.
He owns a handful of guns. He's a very responsible firearm owner, and he practices like he plays. He trains. He goes through the drills. He takes classes. Mm-hmm. He is fairly educated with the weapon. What Chuck doesn't know is he just sat Patrick on top of a gun. Patrick has a handgun hidden underneath his bed, directly under where he's sitting.
Oh, my gosh.
He knows what time it is. He knows he's got about 30 minutes. Shelly's going to get home. Chuck's going to go to town on both of them, or he can try to end it right here.
Okay.
He's able to wiggle out one ankle from the zip tie.
Oh, this is point, getting so good.
Chuck doesn't know. Chuck is midstream peeing.
Yes.
Patrick says, screw it. It's now or never. And he hits the ground. The gun is in a paddle holster underneath the
bed. I also imagine Patrick, if he's into jiu-jitsu and martial arts, he's probably also in very good shape.
He is. He is in very good shape. And the other thing that I think is really important, why I wanted to explain part of this, is movement. Mm-hmm. If you don't typically roll around on the ground, move, get limber, all of that good stuff, the motion it would take to be sitting on a bed, get onto the ground, reach underneath, grab a gun, get it out of the holster, roll around, come up shooting somewhat on target. Mm-hmm. I think it's harder than people think, especially under a high stress situation.
Yes.
Chuck's going to see him.
The level of resiliency to think about this in one of the most frightening moments of your life is just unbelievable.
But delivering rounds accurately at that moment.
Well, hang on. We haven't gotten to that part.
Well, but when I'm trying to say is, when I say it is under crazy stress.
Yeah, yeah.
Chuck sees him do this. So Chuck turns around.
Wait, was Chuck firing. Like midstream when he sees this?
He is peeing. He sees it. He grabs the gun off the back of the toilet. Because remember, he sat the handgun on the back of the toilet. Uh-huh. He grabs that gun and just turns around firing at Patrick.
Sure.
I've always thought we didn't get to fulfill this in the investigation, and I've always regretted it. I wonder if he was still peeing when he turned around. Because if you think about it, how hard would it be to, like, do you just stop peeing?
Yeah, how disrespectful. Anyway. You come into my house, you take me out of the shower, and you piss all over my bathroom. Right.
Patrick also comes up shooting, and it is OK Corral, just round. And they're probably 5 meters from each other, if even that, probably closer. So they're closer than a room's length apart from each other. Patrick gets hit. He takes a round in the calf, kind of through and through his calf. He's not sure if or where he hit Chuck. Chuck kind of falls back or disappears behind the wall in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Now, Patrick is about to do something that to this day, I thought, because we train this a lot, and I don't know that I would have done this.
I don't know that a lot of people would think about this particular scenario and toss it into a fantasy of training.
So the one thing, though, that really impresses me about Patrick, whenever you get into a gunfight, rounds have been exchanged, there's an immediate lull, or there's just a brief second.
A lull in the gunfight.
Yeah, there's a lull where I can start to process, am I hit? I need to move. I need to get to some type of safety, some
where
type of
cover. Where are they?
How is my gun? And one of the things a lot of times we try to train over and over and over again is making sure that your gun is still functional. And you can do that by simply a quick rack, or just maybe you reload if you have another magazine. Mm-hmm. Remember, his hands are still zip tied together.
Yes.
He racks the gun using the footboard of the bed.
Of the bed.
Frame the rear sight onto the footboard to actually confirm, like, nope, I still have one in the chamber. I'm good to go.
Oh my gosh.
And then he realizes there's a lull. I don't see him. I'm out of here. And he just takes off running.
And so, his feet are free now because he freed his
correct.
Feet.
So he runs down the hallway out the front door.
And he's still naked.
No, he's got his boxers on.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay,
he's got his boxers on, but he's still holding the gun because he doesn't know where Chuck is.
Uh-huh.
He's bleeding because he's got a gunshot wound now to his calf. He's in a pair of boxers. And as soon as he comes out at the front door of his house, he sees a car driving down the road. He's like, oh, thank God. So he goes running up and he's waving to the car and they haul ass.
With the gun in his hands.
And he's like, why wouldn't they stop? Like, what the hell? Oh. You can see I've got issues. And then he realizes, shit, I'm waving a gun.
Must look like a crazy person.
Crazy man.
Yeah.
But again, Patrick's mindset is, well, I can't just throw the gun. Maybe a kid will find it.
Okay.
Maybe somebody will stumble across it.
So he's still thinking somewhat rationally.
Yes. In this crazy moment. And he decides to throw the gun in a bush so that he could kind of hide it.
I want Patrick to be my dentist.
Yes, right? Who doesn't? Patrick runs to a neighbor's house, and the neighbor's actually in the backyard. So he makes contact. They're going to call 911. He's starting to get some help.
Do we know if he knew these neighbors? Were his neighbors?
Yeah, I think he at least knew of them. Okay. I don't know much about the neighbor interaction.
Okay.
So the police department arrives. Now, Patrick doesn't keep eyes on the house. Patrick doesn't know anything else about the black Charger. This is all stuff that's known later on. We don't know, or at least at that time, Patrick doesn't know how Chuck even got to the house. He's not watching the house.
Okay.
So when the police arrive, they start to set up a perimeter around the house. They're making contact with Patrick, obviously. But as far as they know, Chuck could still be in the house armed, or he could have fled.
Right.
We don't know what's going on here.
Uh-huh.
So investigate, and this is the middle of the day at this point. So investigations is rolling out there. We've got SWAT on the way now to start to set up a perimeter because we may have some type of a barricaded subject, if you will.
Sure.
Got kind of a funny story here.
Okay.
Gilbert PD had just purchased this new Wazoo state-of-the-art command crime scene command vehicle.
Which they're not cheap.
Oh, I think it was a couple million. It was over a million.
Okay.
It was crazy. It had a poop incinerator. You could actually, the bathroom, if you went to the bathroom in there, it would incinerate it. And it would just make these little dry wafers, and then you could throw it out.
Oh.
It's like a waterless.
So you didn't need a pump or anything.
Yeah, it was completely waterless
system. Interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. It had all this new technology. We knew at this point we're getting information from Shelley, and I'm working on the case now, and we're given Chuck's phone number. Like, this is his cell phone. So I'm thinking this is easy enough. We'll ping the phone. The phone is in the house. We're going to proceed with some type of SWAT operation and we'll figure out what's going on.
Sure.
If not, let's track this guy down and let's go find him. Well, at that time, the only way that you could get the legal documentation to the cell phone company to do a ping was through fax. You had to fax it.
You couldn't just make a phone call from dispatch.
Well, you could. And I had already made the phone call and they're ready to start sending the data.
But they needed the legal documentation.
But they need a form sign that has to come through
via
fax. And to my surprise, first time I've ever been on this command vehicle, and it is nice. It is really nice. There's no fax machine. There's no printer.
Oh, dear.
And I had a bad habit of throwing temper tantrums on crime scenes like this. And I'm in this really nice multi-million-dollar command van looking for the fax machine, at which point I'm told there isn't a fax machine. And I just kind of lose my shit for a second. I'm like, who buys a multi-million dollar command post without a fucking fax machine? Like, what is wrong? Of course, this is some shit we would do.
Clearly, they had never needed to send legal demands to a cell phone provider.
There's so many things you could potentially do in 2009 with a fax machine and a command vehicle. It just made sense.
Even in 2009, a fax machine was a little outdated.
No, it wasn't. All the cell phone providers still used it. You had to have it.
They did.
For investigation stuff, you had to have a fax machine.
Right.
So I'm throwing this tirade, maybe enlaced in a lot of colorful adjectives. And I finally finish. And I'm just talking to a couple of my detectives because I'm a sergeant at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just talking to
you. You just wanted to throw your power around.
I'm just venting. Our chief at the time, Tim Dorn, great guy. Not short, but he's shorter.
He's very
thin.
Very kind man.
He's very sneaky.
He is, yeah.
I turned around and I'll be damned if he wasn't standing within 6 inches of me the whole time behind me.
And he'll just pop up in places that you're never expecting
him. Yeah, you never see him coming.
Yeah, he would pop up on my calls and start walking with me in some apartment complex. And I'm like, where did you come from?
Yeah, so after my tirade of why our police department bought this $1 million hunk of shit, I turned around and there's the chief. Hey, chief.
Who signed off on the $1 million
hunk
of shit.
Yeah, it was pretty much his. So then I felt stupid. Long story short, we figured out the fax machine. Somebody drove back to the police department. We got that sent off. We pinged the phone, and the phone pinged in the house. So Chuck's phone is still in the house. We're going to proceed that Chuck is still in the house. SWAT operation, we try to make contact. He's never going to answer, throw phones or any of this other stuff. We talked a little bit about this last episode.
Sure.
After a while, the SWAT team is going to make entry into the house. They find Chuck in the bathroom.
Okay.
He's dead.
Good.
Yeah. So it's turned over to investigations. This is where this case even takes a little bit of a different turn. Some people might get upset that we're using some of these terms, but there are different terms for how somebody can get shot or how some people shoot people.
Okay.
It's called getting zippered. And some people might be offended, like, why are you using terms like this? But it actually means something. It's not just an offensive term. And what this means is a lot of times when you're under pressure or there's this really high stress incident and you try to shoot, you're outthinking your ability to move sometimes. And what I mean by that is you'll start pulling the trigger before you actually get onto the target that you want to shoot.
I do this oftentimes when I'm speaking to somebody that I may not like so much.
You zipper.
Yeah, I just zipper them with my words.
Yeah. It's so true now that you say that. Yes. It's the same effect with bullets. And why I'm saying it's something we look for is you'll actually see kind of this zipper pattern of shot, 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 shot. And you can literally walk it to the target.
Yeah.
Well, why that's so important for investigations is you get a really good idea of where the shooter was standing. So when we get into the bathroom to finally start this investigation and I'm looking at Chuck laying there on the bathroom floor, he's been zippered. And essentially, as Patrick is coming up, he's shooting. The first round hits the floor. The second round hits Chuck like in the leg.
Okay.
The next one like upper leg, then a hip, then a chest, and then pretty much square between the eyes.
And that'll do it right there, one.
Dropped him. And when he dropped him like that, he didn't know where he hit him. He just couldn't see the threat anymore. So he got himself out of there. Exactly what his training told him to do.
Sure.
In that situation, if you go back and you think about, he knows in another 30 minutes, Shelly's going to be there. He knows this guy's going to kill them. Mm-hmm. He's got his hands are still zip tied. So he's shooting this gun with zip tied hands from the ground.
Right.
Under this crazy pressure while taking rounds being fired at him, still hits the guy square between the eyes.
I would venture to say that there is a very low percentage of population that would be able to be this resilient in a high stress situation like that.
100%. I have a handful of victims that I have come encountered with in one way or another, and I don't know Patrick. Like, I knew him that day. We briefly had some very basic interactions.
Yeah.
Patrick's one of my heroes. Because of the way he handled this situation. It was actually a really cool thing to see it all come together. That's when we get to the hostage torture bag, though, in the investigation. As we start processing more of the crime scene, I don't know what all Chuck had planned, but it was going to be horrific. He had stuff in that bag that if you just take a second and you think about, the hell are you going to do with the blowtorch?
And did Shelly ever get interviewed during all this? What was
she does.
Her statement? Do we know?
Chuck's a dick.
Okay.
I don't know what else.
Well, and he was obviously, here's the other thing. He was a prohibited possessor. And he still had a gun because of the order of protection against him.
Yes, he had two guns. Chuck's the type of guy that if you don't deal with him now, you're going to deal with him later.
Or somebody else will.
I've got to defend Chuck's family a little bit. Chuck's a shithead. His family was actually really good people. Mom and dad, we had to make contact with them for a couple different reasons throughout the investigation. They came and picked some stuff up later on as well. Really, really nice people. Chuck's behavior, although shocking, I don't know that it surprised them.
Right.
I think they had concerns that he was been kind of going off the deep end for a while.
Well, I also don't think that Chuck's behavior is uncommon in a lot of DV situations either.
Extreme, but not uncommon.
Right.
Yeah. And like I said before, in that investigation, we did get a laptop and some other things. So obviously, we had his phone. Chuck's into some weird shit. It was probably best that Chuck departed the earth. I think this would have been the beginning of possibly other terrible things that Chuck would have been into. I do want to talk a little bit. So last episode, when we were talking about graduation day and basically somebody who was crazy having a gun and some common sense gun control, people with mental instabilities possessing firearms is a problem. At the same time, there's two sides of this coin, and I think this is why there's so much friction back and forth in discussing this. It isn't a one-size-fits-all.
But Patrick may not have ever survived had he not had access to his firearm.
Patrick can legally own a firearm. Patrick is a responsible gun owner.
And he sounds like a very mentally stable person.
Very mentally stable. He took training. He can handle himself. Patrick is the type of person that I would argue, if he wants to have a gun, by all means, the dude should have a gun. Mm-hmm. So there are two sides of this coin, and I think it's common sense to allow Patrick to retain a gun if he would
and
like.
To be able to defend himself.
Got a picture here for you.
Oh, this is Patrick.
This is Patrick. Now, I want you to take a second.
He's handsome, isn't he?
He's a good-looking guy.
Yeah.
Take a second. Focus on that tattoo. It's a gun.
Oh, it's on his forearm. Okay, I see it now.
It's somebody actually firing a gun.
Oh my gosh.
Tell me that this incident has not had a significant impact
on his life.
On Patrick, where I think he had that to remind him every day.
Maybe.
That his training and his efforts that got him to that day is what saved his life and most likely saved Shelley's life as well.
Yes.
But I wasn't going to use Patrick.
He has a very nice smile, doesn't he?
Well, he should. He's a dentist. That's mm-hmm. his business. Yeah. I wasn't going to use Patrick's name on this because I was like, he's got a pretty successful dentist thing that he's doing. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he feels about this.
Okay.
And I had actually changed his name when I did the first version of today's
episode.
Yeah,
you were going to call him Wyatt.
I was going to call him Wyatt for Wyatt Earp.
Yeah.
In the OK Corral, because that's pretty much how he handled stuff. I realized when I found this photo that, you know what, I think Patrick embraces this. And I took a chance. I hope that that's the case. But he does have a thriving business. He was about to retire. Mm-hmm. And I found an article that he talked about where he'd had a very successful company doing dentistry. Uh-huh. And he just got to a point where he's like, there's more to life than work. And I'm successful.
There's more to life than root canals and cavities. Yeah.
And apparently he's financially stable where he could make the decision to retire.
Okay.
Well, he got into mentoring and teaching other dentists what he's doing. And it like completely started this second career almost for him. So now he's sticking around and he's more of a teacher, an educator within the dentist work, which is really cool. He didn't stay with Shelley.
This is probably good because you said Shelley and her ex had kids.
I think they had three kids. Okay. And talk about kind of a weird scenario.
Yeah,
of growing
this is
up
the guy
raising,
who killed my dad.
But he's a really good guy.
And I imagine, too, that those moments, Shelley probably wasn't in her best mental state either.
Yeah. So he didn't marry Shelley or didn't stay with Shelley, which I think is probably all right. He does get married later on. He's got a bunch of boys now. I think he's got three boys. He's married. His wife runs a business called mm-hmm. Stella Posh, STELLAPOSH. Stella Posh. We'll put it up on the screen. Kind of a cool little thing that she's doing. She makes like charms that you can put on your purse or on a bracelet, but she customizes them for anything and everything. And if you go to her website, I think it's just stellaposh.com. You name what you're into,
she's got a charm for it.
It's pretty crazy. And it looks like she may even do some custom work as well. So if you wanted a charm, so you were saying.
Oh, yeah, we should ask her to do a Socialite Crime Club charm.
Maybe we do the little icon of the logo.
If they would do it, maybe they're listening to this and they're like, F off. We want nothing to do with you people.
But yeah, Patrick, I will happily announce, Patrick is one of my heroes. He's one of the victims that I came across in my career who decided not to be a victim. And he had prepped for years to put himself both in the mental and the physical space to take control and save his life and save Shelley's. And I've got to commend him for that.
Without ever realizing when he would ever put that training into practice.
Right. Well, how many people? Well, that'll never happen to me.
So many people every day. It won't happen to me. It definitely could. You just don't know how or when or by who. Great episode. It was a great takeaway as well. And I loved our play on really understanding both sides of gun control and maybe where you do or don't fall on it. And really thinking about maybe reconsidering some of those ideas and how we have good quality discussions around that. Thank you for joining us this week, Socialites. Have a very safe week.
All he was saying is, hey, there might be DNA evidence here. They did this sex assault kit. Can you just test the DNA? I didn't do it. The prosecuting attorney's office and the police department are refusing to reopen the investigation and allowing the true suspect to run free.
You know, when someone is innocent and they've been charged and convicted of a crime that somebody else committed, that's something that the entire community deals with because then a guilty person is still out there.
Tell me, who is this person? We'll be right back.